A podcast to honor the gods.
This better come with a sacrifice.
Deus Ex Media.
Rotten cabbages? What kind of slum do you think this is?
All right. We're synced up. Our universes are aligned.
For now.
That's right. Into the Deus Ex Mediaverse.
Hey, babe.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm great. Feeling the sun, feeling the warmth. Just got back from our awesome trip to Disney. And I just want to go back. And I don't want to be a Disney adult because I'm not one. But I want to go back.
I know. Our wallets definitely can't afford it. I don't know. No. Like, you're still riding that high a couple weeks later because the window I'm looking out is very much gray and cold.
Yeah, very dreary.
And dreary. And there is not any sunshine shining on my head.
I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex.
And this is My Cabbages!
An Avatar podcast.
Enjoy!
But my, oh my, what a wonderful day, because we're joined by friend of the pod and best friend IRL, Tina.
True.
Some cabbages.
Hello.
Our first and favorite guest.
Oh, yeah.
Over at, you know, everyone knows Christina. You don't need any introductions. But this is your first time on Korra. So
that's true. Yeah.
Yes. I love Korra.
So
I have a cat named Korra.
We all stan a buff lady avatar.
A buff lady avatar and your elusive feline, who is the only one of your fur babies who doesn't give a flying fuck about us. Because at this point, like, we show up and Penny's always excited to see us.
Yeah, yeah.
Penny always wants head scritchies. Pepper, like, has come around. And
a little bit.
And
a little bit.
She's like, on anti-anxiety meds.
Yeah, she's come around. And Dante, like, Dante usually likes
he vibes. Mm-hmm. Well, he vibes. Respectfully, Korra's kryptonite is loud noises.
Yeah.
And you guys are two of the loudest people I've ever met. So she doesn't like me either. I'm also way too loud for her preference. I have to come at her so carefully.
She's like, this cannot be how all humans are, right? But it has to be.
The reason we named her Korra is because when she was little, we got these kittens, these three kittens, out of our next door neighbor's very dangerous garage. And we were fostered.
She broke down the wall and she was like, I'm the avatar. You're going to deal with it.
Oh, my God. I love that. But she was like, at the time when they were babies, she was the fiercest. So we would like approach them and she would be protecting her siblings and she would be hissing those cute, stupid little kitten hisses where it's like, oh, you weigh one half of a pound. And she would be like, I was like, you're so fierce.
Oh, my God. That's so precious.
And the way that she wrestles with her siblings is very Avatar Korra energy too.
Mm-hmm. Well, like, she's obsessed with Dante. Like,
she's obsessed with Dante. Much like Korra is obsessed with Tenzin, and Tenzin often is like, thank you, sparkling child. And
oh my gosh, Tenzin and Dante do have similar vibes.
They really do. Fierce cheekbones. And she has absolutely no consideration for collateral damage.
Oh my God. That's incredible. Well, as much as we love all of your kitties, Tina, like, I think also, hopefully, you love the show or else you wouldn't be here. I mean, if you were, it would still make a great episode. We welcome most opinions on the show.
Like, what if Tina's this like, is wait. When I told you that I hated Korra?
Oh, wow. Well, you know what? We'll have to have you and MC then on the same episode to duke it out. Like, Tina's like the wolf bats coming in and we
don't
have...
make me a wolf bat.
And MC coming in. Well, if you didn't like Korra, then you gotta be on the bad
the
guy
villain.
Side.
Yeah. Tina coming in, like, I thought we were just gonna talk about my cat for an hour. What is this thing that you're talking about?
The Legend of show? The Legend of Korra. That's where I go and recite for you the, my entire life story of my cat.
I did. Korra, I did that correct? Already.
Yeah. So, all right, you heard it here, folks. Legend of Korra. That's it. That's our pod. Well, for those of you who like maybe joining us for the first time, welcome. And so we don't want to assume anything. So Tina, why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners and where you're coming from and
tell us who you are.
Yeah, and how in your story with Avatar and Korra.
Yeah, hell yeah. I am Christina. I'm the host of Burn Before Reading, which is a podcast where we talk about shitterature. I also am the host of The Restricted Section, which is a Harry Potter breakup podcast for people who, you know, don't care about it anymore, but are still trapped
it didn't,
in a
It didn't start that way.
It's a pro-trans rights Harry Potter slander podcast. For
it didn't start as a breakup podcast like all breakups do.
Yeah, yeah. I started out with sparkles in my eyes and passion in my heart. And now all I have is a hollowness where my enthusiasm used to be.
You ever wanted to watch a podcast, or you ever wanted to listen to a podcast that was an elongated, like, seven stages of grief? Then check out...
It's truly an incredible thing to look back on. But anyway, yes, that is me. That's what I do. And so, Legend of Korra, what year did this come out?
2009, I believe.
Yeah, okay. The end of the aughts.
So, here's the thing. I rewatched the original series and then watched Korra for the first time with my boyfriend Joey, and so I'm reverse engineering what year that must have been. So I think
I think I'm very wrong. I think it's saying this episode Welcome to Republic City aired on April 14th, 2012. So
okay, that makes a lot more sense. So I think that we must have rewatched the original series because Korra was coming out. And then I watched it, I think, as it was coming out in 2012. And, like, you know, obviously no spoilers, but, like, I really love Korra a lot. I think it's a beautiful duet with the original series.
I think so, too.
It's a good example of, like, hey, let's use this world and, like, do something completely different. Like, let's tell a completely different story. And for people who know me, it'll come as no surprise that I, like, relate a lot more to Korra than I do to Aang. God, I love that kid. But, like, ducking and being nice and chill and, like, floating around are, like, I'm just a little bit more of an intense person, I think. And I've always just really related to Korra and her struggles with, like, self-control and figuring out kind of, like, the balance between, like, confidence and, you know, like, too much of that. And I've always just really loved her story, even though some parts of this series I have notes on.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like I was talking about this recently. It feels like nowadays in fandom there is this like all or nothing mentality. Yeah. And I feel like we see this in the live action as well, where, like, you know, we look back fondly on so many flawed shows that we love despite their flaws. And it feels like nowadays some show does something and somebody finds it unforgivable and they're just like, oh, the whole show, I have to throw out everything that's good and yeah, righteous because this one thing.
Well, and the other thing with Korra is that, like, watching it for the first time and having those upsetting moments be a surprise was very, very hard. But ever since then, going back into it, knowing what's coming, I'm able to appreciate it more and, like, understand what they're going for better. And we can talk more about that in next season or next season or next season when I... Are there three or four seasons?
There's four.
Okay. Yeah. We'll talk about that later, but...
Four seasons and I think less episodes because there's, like, only 10 or 12 per season.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Like, yeah, 10 to 12-ish is the average number. Well, speaking of episodes, we have one here. This is book one, Air, chapter 6, and the winner is... this episode, Korra and the Fire Ferrets prepare for the pro-binding finals as Amon threatens a reunited Republic Council to cancel the tournament lest severe consequences follow. At the Avatar and Lin Beifong's bidding, the council disregards the threat and allows a pro-bending tournament to proceed. Right after the conclusion of the match, Amon and his equalists attack the arena. After Amon openly declares war on the Benders, the Equalists retreat and partially destroy the building, frustrating Lin and Korra's halt attempts.
So I got to tell you something before we get into it. I woke up this morning and I was like, I'm going to watch all six of these episodes so far because they're not long. And like, what else am I? It's literally Saturday morning. Like, what do you think?
Saturday morning cartoons. Yeah.
Right.
The best so, like, time to watch and record an episode.
Cereal, weed, and cartoons.
Literally, I had a bagel, but literally besides that, it was my morning. And so I was watching all of these. And then right when the sixth episode, this episode started, Sean, my husband, came downstairs and was like, hey, Anna, Mia, and Thomas are coming over for brunch. And they like walked in the door as this episode started playing. And Sean's like cooking. And I'm like, hey, guys, really glad you're here, friends. You actually do have to sit down and shut up because I actually really need to watch this. So I watched this episode with three people who could not have had less of a clue what was going on. And so they were like, who's that guy? Why is he doing the V for Vendetta mask? And I was like, oh, he's a terrorist. And they were like, what's this girl? And I was like, that's the Avatar. And they were like, wasn't the Avatar a little boy? And I'm like, he was a little boy, but he grew up. And they were like, oh, that's him. And I was like, no, that's his son. And they were like, what? What is happening? Is so funny.
oh my god.
Like, out of Avatar, honestly, that would be a good Avatar, like a good podcast. Maybe, I don't know, it could be terrible, but like having someone on who has never watched Avatar at all, and you just watch that episode, and that's
I did Harry Potter for Beginners with Anna and Mia, two of the people that I just listed. They're very funny. And then Thomas, while we were watching it, was like, yeah, it does seem a little unfair that some people have Benning and some don't. Like, he was becoming radicalized by Amon during this episode. Yeah.
Oh my god, and that does not... That is how you go, like, that is the Kanye West pipeline, y'all. That's how you go from, like, you know, watching and, like little, like, videos about people on the internet to, like, you know... being anti-Semitic.
It starts with some, like... relatively innocuous video,
like a reasonable
where someone
statement,
yeah,
where someone
the
says
YouTube
like,
algorithm.
Don't women already have rights? And then next thing you know, you're on the fucking
oh my god,
like,
I
Andrew
just
Tate
realized
rabbit hole.
Women already have rights. Oh my wow. god, I forgot that.
Crazy.
They have rights.
Yeah, we both did it in sync. That was very fun.
They both
teamwork.
They both just did the brain explodey thing. They did it silently, so I'll narrate.
And I don't think your screen is lined up the same way mine is. Babe,
but do you also do you want to know the beautiful? Do you want to do the beautiful thing?
On my screen.
I know.
The beautiful thing is I cannot see either of you because I had the screen up to read the synopsis. So the fact that we did that like same gesture, it's just so worth
coordination.
Connected at the soul. You are. The Pabu to my Bolin.
I keep, I'm rewatching Once Upon a Time right now. Spoilers for Once Upon a Time season 4, maybe, or 3. But I keep telling Sean, oh my god, we're like when Snow White and Prince Charming lost his heart, and Snow White cut hers in half, and then they each have one half of her heart, and we share a heart. And Sean's like, okay, honey, whatever you say.
Spoiler, not really spoilers, but I love that show. I've watched it the whole
spoiler
thing.
Spoiler alert, I love that show.
Up until that whole, I watched every season as it came out, except for the final season, and I won't say anything about it in my opinions, but my mom I also watched that show, like, most of it, like, and so it just holds a special place in my heart. That's
aww.
All.
I got really into that show when I was just out of college.
Yeah.
My partner at the time, Sarah 2, did not like the show and thought it was the cheesiest thing that she had ever seen. And so,
I mean, it is. It literally is.
It is cheesy, but that,
it's the cheesiest thing I've ever seen.
And
that
ABC,
is what would lead me to calling it my guilty pleasure.
And Disney owns ABC, so they were able to put in all. It wasn't just like Grim Fairy Tales because, that's in the public domain and people can do whatever the fuck they want. They
I know,
like fire hose Disney shit at you and I gobble it up.
No, the one that bothers me is that they put Elsa in her Frozen outfit and she's in a New England small town for weeks and weeks and no one is like, hey sweetie, can I get you some sweatpants?
Yeah, right.
She's literally in this dramatic princess dress this whole time. They're like running through the woods. Like she's like staying on a couch and she's just always wearing this outfit because branding.
Yeah, branding. Yeah. Oh my god. Well, that being that, you know what? And I also, in hindsight, am really upset that that show was just totally not gay, like, at all. And
there's a lot of gay opportunity.
So many squandered opportunities. But you know what didn't squander the, what show didn't squander the opportunity? Legend of Korra.
Are you sure this isn't a Once Upon a Time podcast?
Yeah. This is a Once Upon a Time in Tina's Cats podcast, that's all we have time for.
If people want, what is the name of Robert's podcast?
Entering Storybook.
If people want to check out more Once Upon a Time, there's a podcast for that. You should go check out Robert, who was our first guest for Korra, episode one. They have a podcast, Entering Storybook. Go check it out. So this always be plugging ABC. Oh my God, it came back. Oh no,
ABP. All ABP. Points bulletin.
Always be plugging.
Yeah,
it's ABC.
No, it's always. What does ABC stand for though? Always be something.
Always be closing.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
In that Big Short movie or whatever.
Yeah, always be closing.
Coffee is for closers only. I only remember that from Bob's Burgers.
And we're not going to go down another tangent about how this could be also a Bob's Burgers podcast. Because we all know that if it was going to be one, it would be the three of us.
Yes.
Great. So this episode, y'all, is like, there's a lot at stake here. And it sounds like Mia and Thomas and your friends, like, they still had, to have zero context coming into this and still have opinions about it by the end of the episode. That's really something.
Yeah.
Great writing. Good job, y'all. Understood the assignment. So what are our initial thoughts here? You know, we don't get the 20, we don't have like Hunter 50 episode arcs here. So we can't take the whole pro bending match and stretch it across 8 episodes, but we got, you know, the pro bending tournament. There was some build up. It's been a few episodes.
I think that the much quicker pace of Korra compared to the original series is also like reflective of the protagonists. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
true.
Korra is like watching that the first episode, Korra will throw herself into literally any situation.
Yeah. Yeah. She's the barbarian of the party who just rushes in.
Yes. And everything was moving very quickly and there was a lot going on in this episode, which is good because when I first started watching it, I was like, is this a fucking sports only episode? God damn it. But then I was like, ooh, terrorism. Let's do some of that.
Yeah. And you know, like while watching, I had a like ad hoc conversation with Zach, but mostly myself about analyzing the terrorist attack. I'm like, okay, so what's like a good example of another like an event in history? And I'm like, oh, January 6th. And I'm like, yeah, well, that was about the peaceful transfer of power. And even though it was like definitely terrorized the soul of America, it was more of a insurrection. Whereas like terrorism is like very specific. Here I'm plugging on my global studies, like international affairs hat. Like terrorism is defined by blah 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 blah. But public in public places, and like the goal is to instill fear. And that is exactly successfully without killing a single person. What Amon does in this episode.
Yeah, and like, yeah. So I want to talk about like he's like call off the match, or I'm gonna fucking terrorize, and like. They're like, no, we have to keep doing the match, which I do kind of understand from like a we don't give in to terrorist perspective. But that also is one of the most American things I've ever said, I think. So yeah. I'm wondering if y'all were on like the city council, what would you have thought when you received this message from Amon?
Good question.
See,
like this is literally matters of state. And that's one thing that I love about Korra is because I think it's more into the politics. Like, now that we're not at war and, you know, like, every nation but the Fire Nation is, like, stuck in a perpetual state of, like, static. I love, like, this politics stuff. I don't know what I would do.
It's a toss-up because, like, on one hand, you know, canceling the finals is the ultimate signal to your people that you don't feel like you can protect them. But... But it might be better to quietly cancel the finals than it would be to have the finals and have it not matter that you've upped the security because the terrorist attack happens anyway.
Yeah.
Like, it almost feels like Amon wanted them to do exactly what they did. Because
for sure. Yeah. He didn't think that they would actually. So what I probably would have done is postpone it and maybe indefinitely. I would be like, hey, this is super not canceled, but because of safety risks to human lives, we're not going to do this right now. Like, we're not going to give and I think that that is like would be like an unpopular choice for a politician. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, spoilers, folks, if you didn't tell from like the beginning of the episode, Zach and I went to Disney World. It was great. It was lovely.
Spoilers for something that already happened that you're already posting about publicly.
Spoiler alert, guys. We went on a vacation. I know you didn't want that spoiled for you.
But. I know, but if it wasn't already obvious, we went to Disney. There's going to be a lot of Disney talk throughout this episode. Sorry, not sorry. When we were coming on our flight home, the night before, there was a bomb or threat at the Orlando airport, of course, like, but they have like extra security and stuff, and you know, it almost caused us to miss our flight, and I had a panic attack in the line coming home. But I like, that's kind of the mentality I would have too, Tina. I think, like, I'm glad that like I would have postponed it, like they delayed like, you know, all of these flights and like dead a like total like, you know, sweep. And yeah, I think that we can get into this later once we get to the actual match, but I think that, like, I can see why they went forward with it, but, like, the security dude, like, how, like, I'm sorry, like, you may not be at the stage, like, they didn't have metal detectors, I don't think, in the 1920s, like, correct me if I'm wrong on that, history and technology, but, like, there had to have been, like, pat-downs, like, they would have had, metal, like, ratchet and clank-ass gloves.
I think that we could very much have a metal detector, and it would be a metal bender.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It's like, all of these people are walking in with gigantic metal gauntlets. Do we want to like,
you'd think one of them would have like stomped the floor and we would have seen the echoes go out Lynn does, where she's like, oh yeah, there's a chamber 50 feet down.
And so the only explanation I can come up with is that they were so busy getting the metal benders on all of the intense added security that they just did not think to put one at the door.
Yeah, but also, like, now I have this, like, literal idea in my head of this person, like, that exists in this world in the day-to-day life where they are just literally, like, event security, where their job is to be a metal detector. And they just go, like, it's like, I think that's like a really good link back to like a few episodes ago when Mako is like in the factory and we're seeing how electricity is generated and with the lightning bending, like, that's so cool. Like, that, man, there you go. I just added,
like,
that
you would
to the
call
world.
That job a conductor. It reminds me of when like back in the history books when like there were just a bunch of women in a room doing math on a piece of paper for the spaceships, and those people were called calculators.
Oh,
and then that
that
thing became an object. And so it feels very similar to that, where like with the metal detector, it'd be like a job title, and then they'd invent the device, and then it would just become the name of the device.
Yeah. I wonder though if like, and this is something I think it touches on in the show, but doesn't necessarily get here. But technology, right? And like, that's something that Amon alludes to in his speech at the end. You know, now with technology, benders and non-benders, like, it's a level playing field. So I wonder, like, even though in this city where we've had all this progress, and like after the war ended and Aang like heralded like this new era of peace, like, we see this explosion in technology. But I wonder though if like it's been very deliberate, right? So these have been like all around, and I still like feel it's very controlled because the benders, you know, they're the ones that like technology is meant to supplement bending, right? Like, so that's why we have like all this like energy and how it's generated, and like the armor on the police force. Like, I feel like technology has progressed in ways to like make bending easier for benders, or like as supplements to their power, like a little sidecar, versus like trying to make life easier for non-benders. So, like, I wonder if they see this, you know, technology and this surge as a threat to their bending. And before, not like, maybe that they hadn't before, and the, like, because of that mindset, like, technology, while progressive, has progressed in very deliberate and controlled ways.
Yeah, I was, so when I was talking about this episode to my friends who had no context, they were like, but they're bending with their gloves. And I'm like, I see what you mean, because it's elemental, but it's like science that anyone can have.
Yeah.
And they were like,
those
but
gloves
still,
have batteries on them.
He was, they were like, but it's still elemental bending. And so I was like, just getting that outside perspective, I was like, it really does kind of come down to like a similar kind of threat of power.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I, you know, the technology ultimately is like elemental. And so it's really just the ability to like anyone can put on that glove, but you like can't really, because you need to have money for it. So it's really like not more equitable to like put a focus on technology when there's people who can't afford that technology.
Afford it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Oh, and that's like what terrifies me, like, about, you know, our world and going forward, is like there's already a disparity in like people with wealth and those that aren't. Like, look at this, like the space race, right? We have all of these private investors now, like, you know, that have more money than NASA, and we have to outsource our fucking space program to private industry. And, like, don't get me wrong, I think public-private partnerships definitely can work, but like we see this, and like also with like technology and like, you know, bio stuff, and like the own, like, you know, like the people that were being recruited for Neuralink, like they're mm-hmm. looking for people that have like, you know, quadriplegia, or like, you know, might have not be able to afford it. So like, this is their only option. They have to like literally subject themselves to possibly
come be a gerbil for us. Be a gerbil in the lab
unethical,
for us.
But where people with money, like eventually, like they're not going to be part of these trials. They're going to let the kinks run out, and then they can just like pay a ton of money. Whereas like, yeah, we're not going to go through the dystopian universe. But I think here, like, you yeah. know, it's a very similar thing. It comes down to who has money to afford this. And I'm wondering how Amon was able to here I am asking questions, and I'm like, wait, we might get answers to that later, yeah. but we are no spoilers.
If up, you so. Feel like you have a righteous cause, I don't remember that he steals, but why on earth wouldn't he be stealing?
Yeah. Mm. Well, there's other elements of where they're getting their supplies.
Yeah, there's a very specific source.
Oh, no, I just remembered. It's all yep. coming back yeah. to me. I just remembered.
Yeah, so, you know, ooh, look at me galaxy reading. That's going to be in a few... Tune in next week, folks.
I love this series so much. You know, so much cool stuff happens. I think it's much more
I love
relatable.
Yes.
I think it's much more relatable to a contemporary totally. Audience. I think that it's really hard to see, at least... the kind of fucked up that our world is, I think, is much closer to the world of Korra than the world yeah. of, like, we're not living under that kind of fascism, like
yeah,
the original
and, like,
series.
The original series is very much a transportive journey where it yeah. feels like Korra is kind of about putting a pseudo mirror up in front of
it's
us.
It's like, what if capitalism made things worse? And what if growing technology was, like, ethically hard? That's relatable.
Yeah.
Because those things are both just always true.
You know, back to what we have done in the council, I think also that Mako and Balin make a really strong argument here, in that, like, pro-bending, like, when we're talking about power, like, very commonly sports is a way to that. Or, like, the theater, you know, the arts, like, all these other things are, like, things that can, like, where power doesn't matter. And everyone for a few hours can just, like, suspend, like, that disbelief and, like, really bring people mm-hmm. together around a common cause. And so I think that they were making a good argument that, you know, that if we need this, like, we need the, like, the people need to be able to, it's just more than a game, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm. But again... And it comes down to what I said when I feel like bending was, or pro-bending was introduced. Like, this would be like if you were watching a football game and there were just a large swath of the population that just had the wrong shape of hands. They couldn't catch a football, couldn't hold a football, couldn't do any of the things that they see. That, like, people watch sports and they're like, oh, let's go out in the backyard and have some. But, like, if you can't bend, this is an extremely isolating yeah. event for you. You can't dream yeah, of being a pro bender if you can't bend. It's not a dream that's accessible to you.
Yes, and what's her butt? Pema, Tenzin's wife, when she is talking about, I'm sorry, I think this is several episodes ago, but she's like, I want one kid who's not a bender. And I'm like, yeah. no, you don't, because that kid is not going to be okay growing up.
Yeah.
You don't want your youngest to be the only one without a thing. Are you joking me?
Yeah, right. Absolutely. The youngest already gets picked on by their siblings. Can you imagine it would be like if the siblings could blow air or yes, like shoot fire?
It's wild.
Yeah. Well, and speaking, we'll get to Pema later in the episode because she is not in the episode. And the B plot to this whole thing, like where we are getting more background on the relationship with Lin Beifong and with Tenzin, you know, oh, she gets yeah. mentioned by name, but. You know, mm-hmm. we talked about Pema the homewrecker a few episodes
yeah, yeah.
ago.
Yeah. And we made quite a few homewrecker jokes in the last episode.
It's yeah. It's so funny because, like, I think there's this trope of learning that, like, this beloved mother and... Oh, wait, actually, okay. Because I'm thinking, obviously, the first thing I'm thinking of is Bob's Burgers. And I got a little confused, but in Bob's Burgers, Linda Belcher, like, met her husband Bob and left her fiancé for him. And I think yeah.
those jokes my mom were, like, was... My mom was engaged to somebody else.
I love that. I think it's like drama. When you're like looking at a mom, especially it's like, this is my moral compass. This is my, like for a lot of people, it's like, this is my rock. And then it's like, she did this crazy thing, actually.
I'm sorry. Also, I'm getting really distracted by Rory on top of Zach's head right now, preening
oh my God.
Zach's lustrous locks, which, babe, you have longer hair than I do at this point. I do, and yeah. I love it.
It's very funny because I have my, I'm just also low-key doing crochet. So I just very low-key have a crochet pattern open covering my window. But it's a little bigger than just my face. And so it actually completely was blocking Rory out of my view entirely when Aww. He was on top of your head. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And now he will, I'm pretty sure he's making a nest right now, babe. There's a
He just rogue. Like sneaks all over my body during the recording.
To him, like, he sees your long hair as literally one just giant nest jungle gym.
Yeah, he loves to fuss with it. He's like, I've never seen a creature with so many tail feathers and so long.
Well, speaking of furry friends, can we please talk about Pabu in this episode? Oh my God.
Yeah. Yes, what a hero.
You're on, Pabu.
Pabu baby.
We get past the council meeting and they're able to successfully, like, for like briefly, like Tarlok and this is the only time we're gonna see this. Tarlok and Tenzin are agreeing that no, we don't need to have this, it's too dangerous. And then Lin Beifong, the Fung Fong Fong, comes to set the record, like they move forward. She's like, I got the troops or the officers, I got the power, the benders, let's go. They go forward with the bending, and then
do we think that that Tarlok was like negging Lin? It's like, no, we can't have this. We just don't have the security forces. The police are too inadequate to deal with this threat. And Beifong's like, fuck you, they're not.
I have no idea. We might get to that later, I think, when we learn more about some of Tarlok's motivations. But I don't know if that answer gets answered specifically, so I'll be interested, like, after we do the whole season and then go back and rewatch it, like, what things will come yeah. back up. But yeah, we
sorry, I derailed you were getting to Pabu.
You're fine. Yeah, you know, I think that was like really go like a good thing. I wanted to like comment briefly too on like the Tarlok Tenzin Tenzin. That did not work as elegantly as I thought it would, but hey. The tension. Yeah, we get to the actual match, and Pabu is getting, like, we're hyping everybody up, like, Korra and Mako are doing their thing, and I love that Bolin's priority is making Pabu feel included. He's got a little outfit, and he's so cute. He's part of the team, guys!
It's so good. It's so good.
And Pabu is gonna be, in my opinion, the MVP. Like, if even though they don't get the trophy, the Firebeards don't win. But, like, yeah, they.
Yeah, they don't win because those fucking refs are some bullshit.
That's fucked up.
Like in all sports when my team loses.
And even the announcer's like, I think these refs are not.
Yeah, he all but just calls them out every time. He's like, wow, guys, these dirty refs sure are being dirty.
And it just goes to show that nobody is listening to him.
Yeah, but then I'm like, okay, like the refs were paid off. Like the whole city council's here. Like there has to be
like somebody handle it.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, is there, okay, but is there like a pro-bending, like, council? Like, is this, like, the structure of, like, the International, like, Olympics Committee?
There
is
must
this,
be like, a the structure NFL? Because what's there must be something here? Going on, because there sure are a lot of, like, rules and requirements, you know?
I wonder when pro-bending, like, how quickly after the like, end of the war did we have some version of pro-bending? Because some of it seems like it uses some technology that would not be accessible at first.
I think Zuko started it right away. I think he started it to like bring benders together, and I think the reason I think that is because he really liked and is good at like running drills and like doing fights and stuff. So I think he was like, I don't really want to fight, but I'm good at it and I have a lot of this knowledge and energy. So I think that Zuko was like, we need to start this.
What if we took the Agni Kai, but
yes, but make it in fun,
safe and approachable to the regular folk? Yeah, I think that also. I think it's kind of like rock and roll. You know, jazz, like everything has its roots in predominantly black cultural, at least like in the United States. You can draw all of the music's roots back to mostly black musicians. So I think it's interesting here from my perspective, in my headcanon, the first pro-bending, it was not professional. But, like, all of these different groups of isolated benders that were in, like, camps or prison throughout the different Fire Nation and the colonies. So, like, we see, like, Haru and his dad in prison. I definitely feel that there was probably some, like, jail yard, like, fights that the guards were taking bets on. Same on what is it, the Fire Island or Boiling Rock. So I that's what my headcanon is. Like there, it existed in pockets like of resistance, like throughout. And then Zuko is the one that was like, we're going to make it professional and safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, what are some of our favorite highlights from the match? Like besides the wolf bats being like total, cheaters. And honestly, I'm surprised they like the fire fairies didn't come away with more shit, because like they're getting iced, they're getting thrown water with rocks in it. Like someone
literally rocks are hitting them in the face.
Like there would have been
that's some like concussion shit.
Yeah, and that's it's like so wild that the refs weren't calling those fouls because it's such a safety issue. Like illegal headshots, we don't fuck around with illegal headshots. I guess they haven't discovered traumatic brain injury in this world yet.
Yeah. Oh man, a whole line of thinking. What happens to pro benders? Like, what is the average life span or like the career of a pro bender? Like,
or can super water healing fix that? What are the limits of super water bending? Super water bending healing?
Yeah, Katara. We can't like like copy paste Katara everywhere.
A highlight for me is when, like, just after the attack starts, this like really good at his job announcer guy is giving it his all. The fucking terrorist like burst into his door and he's like, they're in the room with me right now. I am currently wetting my pants. Like,
which is a bad move.
Give that guy a raise. He's like, this is my one job and I'm gonna do it.
It reminds me of the newscasters that there's the hurricane and it's like 100 mile an hour plus winds and rain is coming at them and bullets and they're like, yeah, it's up getting pretty bad out here, Tony. Like
there's this video of me in Great Sand Dunes National Park and it's a phone video and the wind there is extreme, and so the video, all of our hair is like sideways, our clothes are like whipping, and the phone is making like you know, terrible wind noises.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I just, I guess I was feeling stupid. I just looked at the camera and I'm like, it's pretty windy. My friends and I think it's so funny. We send it around sometimes. But it's like, or yeah, is it is
Tina's
windy.
Secret. Speaking of book one error, y'all, it sounds like Tina's a secret.
LOL. Yeah. No, I'm big core energy. Remember, I think I would have a really hard time with air.
I know. Mm. I know.
I'm more just like a puncher and a kicker, you know?
Brute force kind of gal. Babe after my own heart.
The highlight of the match, because the match was by far not my favorite part of the episode, but no. The highlight of the match for me, I think that I just like that pro bending is like fun to watch for me. Like regular sports aren't fun to watch, but pro bending is like, okay, well, let's hone this game down to like 6 minutes. Which is about my attention span. We're going to give you like the best shots on everything. And there's going to be dramatic music in the background. So I'm like, okay, and, this is a sport I can watch.
And there's magic powers involved.
Yeah. So I think it's just really fun to watch them fight. I think that the animation for these kinds of scenes is so good and strong. Yeah. Just like the original series, like it's the strength is in the action. I mean, the strength is everywhere, but like the action animation is so fun to watch. So I just love watching them do their little flippies and turnies. And I like the move that they always use where they're like throwing discs of like ice and earth at each other. I think that it's just fun to watch.
Okay, go with me on this. And I don't know if we're get it. People can disagree with me, but like my Flameo hot take is we already know we're getting seasons 2 and 3 of Avatar the live action. That's been confirmed. Even though the first season definitely has its issues, I'm still glad it was made, and I'm looking forward to 2 and 3. After that, if they were ever to do a live action of Korra, I think, honestly, it's the live action is so much more better suited to Korra than the original Atlas series, just because, like, the technology, like, we have so much, like, good CGI now that can make that work. And the seasons are so much shorter. They already are, like, no more than 10 to 12 episodes, and they don't have to, like, I think they don't have to add a lot of stuff because they didn't know that they were going to get renewed. Like, each kind of season is very a nice insular. Compact
Mm-hmm. And also you could
I want to see live running and pro or I want to see pro running live action. That's where I was going with that. Sorry, go ahead,
Tim. And also your whole the entire main cast of Avatar the Last Airbender is children, but in Korra Korra, I think that she's supposed to be like 16 or 17 or whatever.
She's 16.
That bitch could
she can be played by a 22 year old.
She could easily be 22. All of these teenagers are acting like adults. Like I think that it would be much easier to get strong acting.
Stronger?
Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, I think the acting, like, in the first, like, first of all, these kids are younger, but also the writing just was garbage, and they were just,
No shade on the actors, but they just are younger. They're portraying more earnest characters more earnestly. I think that there could be some real darkness and intrigue in a Korra series.
I agree. And you can also, I think, age them up, like, and people, like, a couple years, like, make them all 18, and just, like, it wouldn't be a BFD.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was agreeing with, so. But, yeah, I just, I would love to see, now I need that live action, and I just need it to be really gay, okay?
Yeah, I just really like, the athleticism of the pro bending. Like, I think it's just I think it's like a fun thing conceptually. I did, because I watched all 6 of those episodes this morning, by the time I got to this episode, I was like, more fucking bending. Is this for real? Like, it does get like a little old. But like, that's why I was relieved to get to like the second half of the episode, which I am excited to talk about.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about it. Sorry. Well, have your final thought, babe.
I always use this example with like the Magic School Bus. There's this one where they destroy the front piece on someone's like fancy hot rod or something, and they have to go down to the molecular level, and they're like, "Oh, we have to rebuild this piece out of molecules," and they start like stacking the molecules, and after a while, because of the way molecular structure works, like the molecules start to gravitate towards the object and they start to like reconstitute themselves, and like I've always used that as a way to describe like good world building things should just organically come out of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have this situation where all of the different bending styles that were all isolated from each other have come together. They're all working together. They're all probably in peacetime, so they're probably a little bored, to be honest. Mm-hmm. How would they use their bending in a way that is fun and constructive and not... like as a weapon,
yeah.
And a sport, it just immediately comes to mind. It's just really well constructed.
Yeah, and it feeds into the way also that the media is so much more a part of this series than the original series. Like, yeah, because press. That, like, being Korra is like, Aang is like literally lost to the ages. Like, who is this child? But Korra yeah. is like such a personality and a face. Like, she puts her face on everything. She's like, I'm out here, I'm learning, look at my journey, I'm here, I'm telling you the ups and downs, come watch me pro bend. Like, she's like fucking out there. And that, it's like, again, it's just like a much more contemporary world with all of those elements playing together.
Yeah.
I mean, I in ninth grade wrote a whole essay about that required, like, in high school, me going to the local college and their college library to do research. But the entire essay about how the Olympics and their origins in ancient Greece, like, actually brought all the city-states together and was, like, the one time where violence was channeled productively led to, like, you know, future allies and, like, leagues and what have you. But yeah, I think that that is kind of what it's serving here, and I agree with everything you said, babe, about like being a nice way to channel that violence and rage in a productive way. So let's talk about this episode, second half of this episode. As the match is going on, the refs are calling for the wolf bats. It's bullshit. We had this back and forth between Tenzin and Lin, and it's really, like, definitely really cute. And I wouldn't call it sexual Tenzin, but
no,
definitely relationship Tenzin.
Yeah, he's like, can we just be good? And she's like, I'm not good with anybody.
Yeah,
I'm a rock.
She's like too, you know, like I obviously Lin Beifong is one of the coolest characters in the world. Like, she's such an incredible badass, but it's one of those characters where she says stuff and I'm like, come on, babe.
Come yeah, really? On.
You don't gotta be this mad.
I know.
Yeah. And especially when, like, what you, if you all had, there was no way that they would have gotten together and had kids. Like, I don't think having kids in a family would ever have been on Lin's agenda. And that was maybe one of the sources of conflict between her and Tenzin. Like, Tenzin mentions, like, yeah. hey, like, when early in the episode, he's talking to Korra about, like, how things didn't work out. And Korra realizes that that person that Pema had, you know, broken up was Lin and Tenzin, and like mentioning, hey, like we were in different places. Like, no, like Pema did not break us up. Like, we had been having issues for a while. And so I wonder what they were, but I definitely feel like definitely differences in their paths, and, you know, Tenzin definitely alludes to that.
Yeah, I definitely think that. And then also Lin and Tenzin are very, very serious people in, like, kind of different ways. And I think that neither one of them
clash hard.
Neither one of them was cracking jokes. Neither one of them was giggling. Like, if you're that serious, I feel like you do need someone who will help you see joy, you know, around you.
Yeah.
And so that's what Pema does for Tenzin and his children, obviously, a little too much. And, like, Lin, I think, needs someone who will help soften her a little bit, because she's hard as a rock.
Needs some water to kind of erode and, like, soften up some of those edges. And also, like, Tenzin, like, I'm not sure Tenzin... Of course, Tenzin wanted a family, but I think from him,
it was never a choice.
It was never a choice. Exactly. You're the last airbender. It's like it lives or dies with you.
I feel like Aang and Katara were like, do we need to explain to him? Like, when you're growing up and your kid's like, where do babies come from? And like learning stuff, it's like, do we need to create a world for Tenzin in which like marrying a woman is the only option?
Oh my gosh. What?
Like, you, I can't imagine Aang and Katara being like, you literally have to do this, but he did literally have to do this.
Yeah, and this is why people, I think, have a lot of the Atlas stands. One of the bigger contentions they have with the show is how they portray Aang as being, like, not this perfect, like, character of, he's
a crazy. Bad dad.
And I'm like, that, like, they have flaws, like, And it made sense that, like, Aang wasn't the best dad. And
one of
that's
my
okay.
favorite things about this series is how honestly they reflect upon Aang's character and his legacy.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, I think because Aang, everything that all of the choices he makes, you can see why he makes them. It doesn't make him a bad person that he had to make hard choices and prioritize. But it makes him a richer character and, like, let him be bad. Also, extremely sexy. In all the flashbacks, I'm like, oh, Aang! Oh, shit! God damn!
Look at that dreamboat.
God damn, he's sexy.
The thing is, like, when you're the Avatar, I think, like, Kiyoshi was trying to get this across to Aang in the live-action version, episode 2. It's like a politician, right? Every decision you make as the Avatar is going to piss half the people that are coming to you off because of the nature of solving conflicts. That's how it works. So it just seems like as someone of that amount of providence, you just naturally accrue enemies.
Yeah.
You accrue people who you wronged or slighted. And sometimes, unfortunately, that is your kids. But I feel like we went through this with The Last Jedi and people like ran into Mark Hamill's like new Luke. They were like, oh, who's this loser guy on an island? Like, who cares? And I'm like, I think that The Last Jedi is the best of the three new movies. But also, like, shit didn't work out for him. And that's okay. Like, it's okay to show weakness and vulnerability in the characters we have built up to be unflappable. It just means that the thing that they're facing is serious.
Yeah.
And I think it just comes back to it's important to show flaws in characters. And it's interesting because, like, literally not just fans of the show, but in the actual show, in Korra, like, people put Aang literally on a pedestal.
He's on a gigantic pedestal in the middle of the bay.
Where his son has to look and wake up to. Every day. He lives on Airbender Island.
They're really into statues in this world because they showed the statue of Toph, too. I don't feel like where I live there's any statues of people from one generation before me who did, like, a random thing.
No, not at all. That couldn't be seen as controversial.
There's all of those Confederate generals that we had to take down, though.
Awkward.
But, like, You know that moment in, like, so many movies and stuff where, like, the character is about to get lucky. So we see, like, it pans over to his bedside table where we have the picture of his mother that he then, like, puts, like, face down or whatever. Like, you can't do that, Tenzin. You can close your window, but, like, he's there, man. He's just staring at you, dude.
Staring in through the window. What a nightmare.
He's always watching.
Yeah. It's like, oh, let me get some fresh air before our next round. Oh no, Dad! This is weird.
And his spirit could be, like, the way that the Avatar works, his spirit could literally be vibing there.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, okay, yeah. And I might be revealing too much here. Don't ask me how I know this, but there definitely is a sexy Avatar, like, Levengen of Korra, mobile game, and Tenzin is definitely a main character.
Oh,
and
daddy,
I just now can't see how this works, and I feel like that is, like, hey, canonically, like, he's gonna have a hard time, like, how in depth is this simulation? Because if he's trying to like lay someone on Airbender Isle, there's no way he is getting it on.
Tenzaddy.
But also, Tenzaddy.
I don't agree with that one.
Zaddy is like a thing. Zaddy is like a new meme. I don't know what it means.
It's not new. No, new, wrong. Zeddy is like, I would say 4 to 5 years old is when I first
started. Well, I'm old and out of touch. So there you go. Perfect illustration.
That's where we're at in our timeline. Yeah. It's trickle down memes.
Yeah. We use them 6 months after the cool kids, and that's the cool kids sign of like, oh, yikes. Yeah. The millennials are on it. Let's move on.
Corral.
It's like when Mr. Krabs says, that's Coral, sweetie. And she says, Coral, definitely out. Like, that's the Zoomers, like, for us. And Generation Alpha.
This is Gen Alpha, and Gen Z is, like, only power right now. Like, meanwhile, like, we have the Zoomers at the top and or Boomers at the top and Millennials in the middle. We're just, like, that middle awkward child. And, like, we're trying to just make it work. We're, like gobbling the scraps that those Boomers are leaving for us and having to move in to afford a house and all of this bullshit. And then Zoomers are just like, there's nothing left for them. Here we are in the tower of the Gordon Ramsay show where Zoomers or Boomers take all of the ingredients, people in the middle, we got some stuff, we're not starving. And at the bottom, they're like, fuck, this is all you've left us? Well, we're going to turn it upside down and we're going to make all of these memes and all of these pop culture references that you're not going to get. And we're going to make you feel really fucking bad about it and turn OK Boomers into... That's it. That's the power they have. And it's, you know what? It's worked for them, but take it, reclaim it. So they don't have trickle down in economics. They have trickle down memes.
That was perhaps the most millennial rant I've ever heard in my entire life.
Proud baby. I'm turning 33 today. This episode is going to premiere on my birthday.
Oh my god! Happy birthday to me!
And then me 2 days later.
Yeah, Zach's birthday is just a couple days later. So that means that I'll see you tomorrow.
This is a weekend of Tina, and I planned this on purpose.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy that you're like sitting there in your office right now recording a podcast, and you're like about to walk into our door.
Well, speaking of walking through the door, that is pretty much what the Equalists do.
Yeah.
They
bust in. This whole scene is so freaking hype.
It's so cool.
We get like big, like multi people action. We get Spider-Lin. Mm-hmm. I mean, we get all of the like. It is the most hype action scene of the show so far.
Yeah, my favorite part of this episode is when Korra fucking water blasts out of the lazy river and she's like, I'm gonna fucking blast myself to the top of this arena, and she almost does, which is so impressive. Who cares that she fails? She literally goes hundreds of feet in the air and then she's falling. She didn't, because the Equalists are going like out the roof. That's where they're at. And fucking Lin Beifong shows up and whips her up, and then she goes flying up through the ceiling, and she gets level with the Equalists who are like flying away, and it's not a helicopter, but it's basically a helicopter, and she's fucking fire blasting them. Ah, it's so fucking cool. It's so fucking cool to look at.
Do you want to? I don't want to steal your joke that you made earlier, babe.
Which one? Go for it.
Spider-Lin.
Does whatever a spider-lin can. That's not my joke. That was a big meme when this show was like current.
Oh, well.
It's right
there.
People
were all talking about Spider-Lin.
It is. Into the
Lin-verse.
There we go. And no, we're not talking about Lin-Manuel Miranda.
No, God.
But
he is
Disney,
one of the Lins.
But don't make me...
That's the big twist is like he is one of the Lins in the Lin-verse. Like, Lin Beifong
Wait,
is just
so
way,
funny.
A way better Lin.
Linda Belcher.
Yeah, it's like, are you kidding? In our universe, we're stuck with fucking Manuel Miranda? Seriously? That's our Lin? They get Lin Beifong and we get Manuel Miranda? Fuck.
The League of Lins.
The League of Lins. Like literally, this scene, like, there are action scenes in the first and second, like, Spider-Verse movies where, like, this episode was clearly like, hold my beer. Like, I'm first in line here. These big dogs are all just crimping off my style. And then, yeah, we get that hype scene where, like, they get up on the roof, and now they're on the roof. And this is the cool thing about, like, it feels like some action scenes, they go on a little too long, and we get, like, fatigued by the action. But I feel like this one changes its location enough times that like it stays really fresh. Like this action sequence is probably like half the episode. It's a long ass action sequence, but it is never not engaging.
Yeah. It's really cool. There's a lot of moving parts. We're worried about it starts when the Equalists come in. It starts with they tie up Cora Mako. I haven't been watching this for very long, so I'm, and then Bolin is the other one. And then the ferret is called Pabu.
Pabu.
And so they're tied up by what? And then the ferret could just fucking eat through it. I'm like, what is this? I feel, because I was imagining my cat Penny, and I was like, it would take her literally 48 solid hours of chewing, even with her sharp teeth, to get through like any kind of rope that could contain someone who has bending powers.
I always love moments like that. Like the prime example is when Bob goes to swallow the keys in Bob's Burgers, and he's like, "No, that's I'm pretty sure that's impossible." How can they always do that in movies?
And fucking Bolin is like doing. I was thinking about in Emperor's New Groove when Kronk is speaking squirrel.
Yeah,
he's like making little click, like little ferret sounds to Bob. And Cora and Maka's faces are both just like so skeptical.
And Bolin does it like he rolls that speak with animals check, and it's super successful.
Yeah, Pabu to the rescue in his little uniform, like you said, it's literally the cutest thing in the world.
Yeah, we stand Pabu.
So he gets them out, and then they're out in the. Oh, wait, that's before that they're out in the Lazy River and they get fucking electrocuted to hell.
Yeah, but still, like, we don't see anyone die in this episode, but sorry. I don't care how, like, impervious to damage benders are. They would have been fried.
They just would have. That's
just science.
Yeah. And then that's when Cora does her water blasty thing. And so, again, watching this show with friends who had no context, they were like, during the fighting scenes, they were like, why is she fighting with water when she has fire, which is a lot more destructive? And I was like, well, a couple things, you know, they have like a balanced team if she does water. And then also water is her like primary element. That's the one she was born into, even though she's strong with the other elements. And so I really like moments where you feel that dominance of water in her. And I think her doing like the blast off water spiral is a big water bitch moment. Like, I love it. I love it so much. Yeah.
And I love that, like, she, a very core thing, underestimates the lengths at which we can go.
She
like,
literally
overestimates her power.
She did not look up. She just blasted off. Like, she would rather die super literally than think about what she's about to do for 1 second.
Yeah.
In my move, what I would have done, though, is I would have just turned all that water to ice and used that to step off. And then, like, I don't know. But, like, she probably doesn't have enough control of it yet. Maybe. I don't know. But we've seen how firebenders use fire to fly. I think she had to, like, in this moment, you know, when you're fighting, when you're in the moment, like, you're in lizard brain mode, and she's just going to her default. So that's why I agree with you, Tina. Like, water's her element. It's her strongest. She's like panic. She doesn't even think. She's just like go and does the like thing that comes to her most naturally. She still doesn't have that sense of balance and the elements. And like, we know she can't metal bend. So So like, there's all this structure around her that she could potentially use to reach. But she's not there yet.
Yeah.
Plus, it's so easy to look back on a piece of footage and go, why didn't she just do this? Maybe because she was reacting in the second, like, her brain was running at full capacity. And
that good when it runs at full capacity.
Right. And we have the freaking gall to watch a scene 8 times and with all the time in the world go, well, she could have just done this. It's like, but she didn't do that because she was I don't know.
We're John Madden and we get our board and she could have gone here and then blah, 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 blah. Like,
it's the same reason why, like, you know, a cellist will like practice their cello performance for 80 hours at their house, and then they go up on stage and they flub it, and no one sits there after the performance going like, well, why didn't they just like do it right? It's like, because they messed up. They cracked. I don't know.
But also,
it's so hard to make decisions in the moment.
Well, also, as being someone who is a musician and has like performed on stage and stuff, like a lot of good, just like with actors or artists, like whatever person is in a craft, yeah, like yes, there are incidents certainly when they flubbed it, but a lot of the times, like unless it's just like pure like stage fright or just like you just go, you're not in that mindset, they're so good that at the performance that when they're the only people that know who messed up, right?
Usually, yeah, that's
and
true.
Like they're their own biggest critics, and so for you, like when you draw and you're like, oh, this sucks, and I'm like, this is amazing, and you're like, yeah, well, didn't come out like what I was envisioning in my head, and like you're the only one that sees those flaws. So before we go and finish our episode, I did want to touch very briefly on Amon's speech. It wasn't just the equalist throughout the crowd, like Amon literally just shows up and gives this whole speech.
It's
like,
extremely takes away, badass.
Takes away the bending of Tano, the like douchebag leader of the.
Yeah, we have to like show what he can. Bats. We have to show what he can do with someone that we don't care about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so just within the matter of seconds, so that's why like this, it's more than just like the equalist being in here. They cut straight to the heart, and that's what his plan was all along. Like he even says halfway through the episode, this is going perfectly. His plan all along was to like, and I don't know how he knows all of the flaws in the system and how he's perfectly able to predict like every single move that these people are going to make. I wish we had seen a little bit more of that. Like maybe there was a spy or.
It'd be cool if there was a mole. Yeah. That they had to assess.
Yeah. But he completely predicts, his plan goes off flawlessly. And as he's giving this speech, like the language that he's using is so chilling. Like he uses phrases like removing the impurity and calling bending unnatural. And, you know, it's very eugenic-y. And I think that this show, why I like it, is it's able to be, because it's aged for a slightly older audience, they're not talking to us like they're us, like we're babies, and we're able to get really dark with this. Like, don't get me wrong, we've talked at length about, we have a whole series about it, how the original series is like got its dark moments and genocide and yada yada, but like I think it's, there's so many more layers here, and on every rewatch I see something new. And with Amon, I think just that, and that's scary because we're seeing that in our own world, right? We're like, you know, the one of the front runners for and the candidate for president is using like these similar phrases talking about immigrants coming to our country, and it's disgusting. And it's just, it really, I think, shows it's much more, it can show how a movement can really, really, really go into radicalization very, very quickly, and how something starts as like, oh, they have, we hearing the bender in the plaza talking about how they have more money and more power, and blaming a group for their strife and like their political and their social situation, how they're treated in society, but then it very quickly radicals like, oh, well, they shouldn't exist at all.
I think it's interesting because I do feel like the equalists, they're going for like equal, it's in the name, but we talk more about like being like equitable instead, right? Is that the word? Which is
which is
more about like working with what we've got, you know, like understanding that people are born into different circumstances and like how do we find a balance there, rather than going for like we need to all be the same.
Exactly. Yeah. So equity is a word I use in my job every day. And I always I heard it best explained to me as equality is everybody gets a pair of shoes, and equity is everybody gets a pair of shoes that fits. So like recognizing, that not everyone needs the same things and people may need more, and it's not a pie. You're not, by giving someone more of something, that is not taking away something from you. But anyway.
But I wanted to mention, you mentioned how viscerally scary this is. And I think it comes down to, it's the difference between something like like Insidious, where it's some ghostly demon who's like, yeah, we can be scared of that ghostly demon, but like we're pretty sure ghosts and demons are like probably not a thing, right? Whereas we look at Nope, right? The scariest scene in that movie is when the chimp like loses his shit like on set and starts like bludgeoning people and stuff. That is a very visceral scene because it is like very realistic. It feels like it could really happen on the set of one of these like exploitative like sitcoms.
Yeah, you want to know what is super realistic? A kind of grumpy boy who doesn't have everything he wants. Well, TBD on that, but you know, like a man being like, this isn't what I want it to be. I'm gonna hold a public location hostage with my violence. That's right. That's like
everyone
chillingly,
needs to listen to me.
That's chillingly real in our world.
Yeah.
Yep. And you know, I think that speech, like listening to it, you know, the Equalists, like they have just been following blindly and will at this point do anything that a mom tells them to do. And it's like, that's how, like, you know, I don't think Amon, like, we will learn later that he has other motivations and they've been here this whole time. So it's not like he himself is becoming radicalized through this process. He has been deliberately shaping and now is like peppering these words in that just go completely unnoticed while the other Equalists are just kind of owning the benders in this public space and accomplishing what they set out to do and instilling fear and making people to just live their day-to-day lives. It's more than just making benders feel what non-benders feel, that helplessness. And I just think it's, Amon is the perfect villain.
Yeah, I really love the real world villains in Korra. I think they're cool. Also, when Amon was talking, did anyone else notice that he's wearing a very thick, hard face mask and talking into a microphone, and it sounds clear as day?
Sounding like this. Yes, right. Republic City. I am
the mayor. Just picturing people being like, "What is he saying? I can't."
Yeah. What,
hear
what was
you.
That? I'm sorry. I can't.
You have been trapped in the bondage.
I'm sorry. What?
You sound like you're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Folks, this has been an incredible session of Dungeons and Dragons. It started out as everybody thought, the whole party was like, "Oh man, we're gonna come for a nice, lighthearted like sports arc. Like our sports arc is probably coming to a close.
This is gonna be a narrative episode."
Yeah. And then it's like the school bus and freight train meme, where the school bus is like the fun sports episode and the freight train is like the Amon main plot, like barging in. It really tested our character's mettle. And so with that, let's get together and award some experience points.
Hell yeah.
Uncle, do you realize what this means?
I won't get to finish my game.
Shouldn't there be a board or some pieces or something to jangle?
I won Dungeons and Dragons and it was advanced.
Evil? Or maybe chaotic neutral.
The Demogorgon!
We're deep shit.
You've been shot by an arrow.
Ow!
Well, there'd be penalties to her experience if she acted out of alignment.
I don't have a crit fail yet, but I do have...
Yeah, I think we should start with crit successes. I definitely
have there's a lot more crit successes. Yeah, I have mine. I mean, the whole... I'm just going to get it out of the way. My crit failure, obviously, is the whole Bender situation. Like, they feel miserably here. Everyone rolled poorly and...
The security staff, you mean?
Yeah, or just, like, all of the Benders, like, Lynn, her whole crew. Like, sorry, girl. I know you're badass. I know you're a BAMF, but... everyone's pride here got in the way, and so that's gonna be my crit fail. My crit success is, because there's two, I couldn't make up my mind. So the first one is an obvious one. It's Pabu. Pabu is the MVP. I already said that earlier. Mm. And how he does his little dance and no one claps for him, which is a crime. And even though it was a perfect Nat 20 performance, and then he comes through and Bolin does his little like cronk, like speaking squeakity squeak squeak squeakin, and gets him to chew through the little ropes, and he has to give him a pep talk because he's scared. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it comes through, and that's mm-hmm. why Pabu is my MVP.
Aww.
And saves everyone and then allows like Korra to get free and like go do her stuff and her avatar shit. And then my other one is our unsung hero. I know how, despite how much I hate capitalism, I am going to give a plug for our good old voice actor Fred James and the Cabbage Merchant. At the beginning of the episode, we get like a little advertisement.
Yeah. I was going to mention this too.
A little advertisement over the radio for Cabbage Corp. And it's described Cabbage Corp as Republic City, trusted name and technology for over 50 years.
Is it supposed to be like, is it, the joke is that it's Apple because it's like a, instead of a fruit, it's a vegetable.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe. I don't know.
Like instead of Apple Corp, it's like Cabbage Corp.
Well, they needed to give something for the Cabbage Merchant to go. So like that, honestly, and hey, Netflix, listen up here. Not just us, but James himself agrees, you know, because we have like we have really great exchanges on Instagram.
Just, we have
like,
a such direct a line to that wonderful man.
Such a treasure, and we're so grateful for how approachable he is. But we all agree that if we can, you took so much content for season two into season one, you're gonna need some time to pad it out. Why not get this backstory on the Cabbage Merchant and his family and his cute little husbandu or NB friend and his family, and that like sets the stage for Cabbage Corp and like a small business thriving into what it becomes. So yeah, I want to see that story. Thank you.
I do as well, but I also want to give my crit fail and crit success.
Go for it.
My crit fail is probably gonna be, I don't know, I'll start with my crit success. The crit success is definitely the announcer for the sport, because he just works through every, like, he's literally being like held at glove point, and he's like, all right guys, I'm still here, they're holding me hostage, this is terrifying. And it's just, give that guy a raise, he's doing his job.
Can you roll a nat 20 and still piss yourself?
I mean, I think you can. I think you roll a nat 20 to piss yourself for emphasis.
Yeah, well, it was a crit fail followed by
it's a combo. It's a salad. It's like they asked him like to roll with advantage, and he rolled a 20 and a 1, and they were like, "All right, well, usually we don't do this, but the 20 is you finishing your spiel and then getting knocked out, and the 1 is that you piss yourself."
Nice.
And tell everyone. What about you, Tina?
My crit fail is going to be, oh shit, what was it? I should have written it down. My crit fail is the other guy from the other team. when him and Cora go toe-to-toe, that was this episode, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And he goes down, like, kind of instantly.
Yeah.
After all of that, I was like, what? and then my crit success, I think that when Cora was like, I'm going to do this like water tower to the sky, I think that she rolled like an 18. And then Toph Beifong had a nat 20 on the assist.
Yeah.
Because that was really good. There was a lot going on in that. And she fucking handled it in the middle of an empty room.
That was some hype shit.
Lynn didn't leave her hanging. And it's perfect because like earlier when Tenzin and Lynn were having that conversation, he really brought it back. He's like, why do you hate Cora? Because like you take it out on her a little tough, and then we see her coming through, and actions speak louder than words, damn it. Lynn like stands by her commitment, so good on her. Mm-hmm.
Well folks, that is gonna do it for us. Tina has an awesome new podcast that I was on a few weeks ago.
Oh yeah.
It was very awkward and funny and like a strange mirror. It's like, you know, Facebook has this thing called like the what's it called, like the nostalgia machine or the memory something or other, where it like shows you a post that you made like 5 years ago, and it's almost always like either cringe or like, wow, I was such a shitty person, why was I such a shitty person. But that's Burn Before Reading in a nutshell. It's just that Facebook feature that like forces you to look at yourself in the mirror.
All those memories, good and bad. Yep. Well, Tina, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, pimp your shit.
Yeah, I mean, listen to my podcast. We're at Burn Before Pod everywhere. And also, if you need help breaking up with Harry Potter, you can listen to the restricted section, which is, I don't know. You can find us by typing in the restricted section. I really don't use our social media anymore. Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. I really love Cora a lot.
Absolutely.
And we love you a lot.
Oh, I love you too.
And you can find us, My Cabbages, on Instagram and Threads at My Cabbage Cast. You can also, if you have more to say to us and want to get your stuff written on the show or read on the show, with your permission, of course, you can email us at mycabbagecast@gmail.com.
And I Twitch stream very occasionally on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. EST. Sometimes I'm there, sometimes I'm not. Usually if I'm not, it's because no one showed up.
But also, if you want to join our wonderful community where you get to interact with us and our lovely pod daddy, Tina, you can contribute to our Patreon. $1 gets you access to the whole Discord. That's it. That's all we do for our Patreon. We don't have bonus episodes anymore. Yeah. But if you really just want to say you're a cabbage corp, you know, you are a hustler and want to, you know, give $20 just because he can, like our amazing friend Matt. We love you, Matt. Thank you again for being our lovely, lovely patron at the Avatar State, which we probably need in this episode because for some reason, even though Cora is getting flashbacks, she is yet to enter the Avatar State.
Yeah.
So that's And if you can't donate, then go and, you know, give us a review and Tina's review podcast while you're at it. Give us both 5 stars because you love us.
Anyway, folks, I'm Zach.
And I'm Alex.
And I'm Christina.
And this has been My Cabbages! Snuck in under the wire there.
Slid into those DMs.
Two lovers forbid one another. A war divides their people. And a mountain divides them.
My pants.
I'm Christina Kahn.
And I'm Leela Hilton.
And this is Burn Before Reading,
the podcast about shitterature.
We're here to examine the terrible writing we did when we were younger.
Like that school project you were really proud of.
Or that poem you wrote when you got dumped.
Well, how about that apology letter you wrote to your mom when you got into that fight?
Or the song you recorded before you knew how to write music.
Okay, don't at me. And we're here to talk about other cringy literary topics along the way.
Like the Library of Alexandria.
And Dewey Decimal.
His name was Melville. Melville Dewey.
Oh, well, do we want to get the clips rolling?
I don't think I ever recovered from this in terms of being cool.
Why did I say any of this?
I do like the drama.
So there is actually quite a bit to unpack here.
Oh, all this drama was so addictive as a teenager.
There's no punctuation to it. I'll start with that.
I actually have no memory of this.
There were so many lies that I was telling.
It's not terrible.
No one, like, really taught me how to write a good short story.
That was a journey.
Listen to Burn Before Reading
every Wednesday, wherever pods are cast.
Deus Ex Media.